ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Hare Krishna, everybody. Welcome back to the live studios here in Govardhan, ISKCON Bhaktivedanta Ashram, where the reading of Srimad Bhagavatam has become our life and soul. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We've reached the 14th chapter of the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Ideal Family Life. Text 1. Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired from Narada Muni, O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation according to the instructions of the Vedas. Purport. In the previous chapters, the great sage Narada has explained how a brahmachari, a vanaprastha, and a sannyasi should act. He first explained the dealings of a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, because these three ashramas, or statuses of life, are extremely important for fulfillment of the goal of life. One should note that in the brahmachari ashram, vanaprastha ashram, and sannyasa ashram, there is no scope for sex life, whereas sex life is allowed in grihastha life under regulations. Narada Muni therefore first described brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas because he wanted to stress that sex is not at all necessary, although one who absolutely requires it is allowed to get to enter grihastha life or household life, which is also regulated by the shastras and guru. Yudhishthira Maharaj could understand all this. Therefore, as a grihastha, he presented himself as Griha Mudha Dihi, one who is completely ignorant of the goal of life. A person who remains a householder in family life is certainly ignorant of life's goal. He is not very much advanced in intelligence. As soon as possible, one should give up his so-called comfortable life at home and prepare to undergo austerity or tapasya, tapodivyam, putrika. According to the instructions given by Rishabhadev to his sons, we should not create a so-called comfortable situation, but must be prepared to undergo austerity. This is how a human being should actually live to fulfill life's ultimate goal. Text 2. Narada Muni replied, My dear King, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood, and instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer these results to Krishna, Vasudev. How to satisfy Vasudev in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord. Purport. The format of grihastha life should be dedication to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Anashrita karmapalam karyam karma karotiya sasanyasi suyogicha nagniranir nichakriyaha. One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no work. Whether one acts as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi, he must act only for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Krishna, the son of Vasudev. This should be the principle for everyone's life. Narada Muni has already described the principles of life for a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, and now he is describing how a grihastha should live. The basic principle is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The science of satisfying the Supreme Lord can be learned as described here. Sakshat upasita mahamunim. The word mahamunim refers to great saintly persons or devotees. Saintly persons are generally known as munis, or thoughtful philosophers, concerned with transcendental subject matters. And mahamunim refers to those who have not only thoroughly studied the goal of life, but who are actually engaged in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. These persons are known as devotees. Unless one associates with devotees, one cannot learn the science of Vasudevarpana, or dedicating one's life to Vasudeva, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In India, the principles of this science were followed strictly. Even 50 years ago, I saw that in the villages of Bengal and the suburbs of Calcutta, people engaged in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam daily when all their activities ended, or at least in the evening before going to bed. Everyone would hear the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam classes were held in every village, and thus people had the advantage of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes everything about the aim of life, liberation or salvation. This will be clearly explained in the next verses. Texts 3 and 4. A grihastha must associate again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and his incarnations, as these activities are described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. Purport. The Krishna Consciousness Movement has been established to give grihasthas all over the world an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita specifically. The process, as described in many ways, is one of hearing and chanting Shinvatam Sakata Krishna Punya Shravanikirtana. Everyone, especially the grihasthas, who are mudhadi, ignorant about the goal of life, should be given opportunities to hear about Krishna. Simply by hearing, by attending lectures in the different centers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, where topics of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are discussed, they will be purified of their sinful inclination for constant indulgence in illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling, which have all become prominent in modern days. Thus they can be raised to the status of light, punya shavana kirtana, simply by joining the kirtan, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by hearing about Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, one must be purified, especially if he also takes prasad. This is going on, this is all going on in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Another specific description here is Srinvan Bhagavato Bhikshnam Avatara Kritamritam. It is not that because one has once finished Bhagavad Gita, he should not hear it again. Sounds familiar. The word abhikshnam is very important. We should hear again and again. There is no question of stopping. Even if one has read these topics many times, he should go on reading again and again, because Bhagavat Katha, the words spoken by Krishna and spoken by Krishna's devotees about Krishna, are amritam, nectar. The more one drinks this amritam, the more he advances in his eternal life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Bhagavad Gita ki jai. The human form of life is meant for liberation, but unfortunately, due to the influence of Kali Yuga, every day the grihasthas are working hard like asses. Early in the morning they rise and travel even 100 miles away to earn bread. Especially in the western countries, I have seen that people awaken at 5 o'clock to go to offices and factories to earn their livelihood. People in Calcutta, in Bombay, also do this every day. They work very hard in the office or factory, and again they spend 3 or 4 hours in transportation, returning home. Then they retire at 10 o'clock and again rise early in the morning to go to their offices and factories. This kind of hard labor is described in the Shastras as the life of pigs and stool eaters. Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kashtan kamam arhati bid bhujam ye. Of all living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for the dogs and hogs that eat stool. One must find some time for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. This is Vedic culture. One should work 8 hours at the most to earn his livelihood, and either in the afternoon or in the evening, a householder should associate with devotees to hear about the incarnations of Krishna and his activities, and thus be gradually liberated from the clutches of Maya. However, instead of finding time to hear about Krishna, the householders, after working hard in offices and factories, find time to go to a restaurant or a club, where instead of hearing about Krishna and his activities, they are very much pleased to hear about the political activities of demons and non-devotees, and to enjoy sex, wine, women, and meat, and in this way waste their time. This is not grihastha life, but demoniac life. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, with its centers all over the world, gives such fallen and condemned persons an opportunity to hear about Krishna. In a dream, we form a society of friendship and love, and when we awaken, we see that it has ceased to exist. Similarly, one's gross society, family, and love are also a dream, and this dream will be over as soon as one dies. Therefore, whether one is dreaming in a subtle way or in a gross way, these dreams are all false and temporary. One's real business is to understand that one is soul, aham brahmasmi, and that his activities should therefore be different. Then one can be happy. Brahmabhutak prasanatma nachochiti nakankshiti sarveshibhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward all living entities. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. One who is engaged in devotional service can very easily be liberated from the dream of materialistic life. What a purport. Hare Krishna. Text 5. While working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. Purport. This is the picture of ideal family life. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy about the goal of life, Ramananda Roy described it in different ways, according to the recommendations of the revealed scriptures. And finally, Sri Ramananda Roy explained that one may stay in his own position, whether as a brahmana, a shudra, a sannyasi, or whatever, but one must try to inquire about life's goal, atato brahma jigyasa. This is the proper utilization of the human form of life. When one misuses the gift of the human form by unnecessarily indulging in the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and does not try to get out of the clutches of Maya, which subjects one to repeated birth, death, old age, and disease, one is again punished by being forced to descend to the lower species and undergo evolution according to the laws of nature. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Being completely under the grip of material nature, the living entity must evolve again from the lower species to the higher species, unless he at last turns to the human form, until he at last returns to human life and gets the chance to be freed from the material clutches. A wise man, however, learns from the Shastras and Guru that we living entities are all eternal, but are put into troublesome conditions because of associating with different modes under the laws of material nature. He therefore concludes that in the human form of life, he should not endeavor for unnecessary necessities, but should live a very simple life, just maintaining body and soul together. Certainly, one requires some means of livelihood, and according to one's varna and ashrama, this means of livelihood is prescribed in the Shastras. One should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood, and when he does so, Krishna helps him. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, and old age. Attaining this freedom and not inventing unnecessary necessities is the basic principle of Vedic civilization. One should be satisfied with whatever means of life comes automatically. The modern materialistic civilization is just the opposite of the ideal civilization. Every day, the so-called leaders of modern society invent something contributing to a cumbersome way of life that implicates people more and more in the cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease. These are classics, huh?
Those are nice purples.
Huh?
Those are some nice purples.
Oh, classic. Vintage, Prabhupada.
One phrase that I've always appreciated is unnecessary necessities.
Yes.
That's a definite Prabhupada-ism.
Yeah.
It's a very poetical turn of phrase, unnecessary necessities. And then also this point about making a livelihood, one should just invent some way. I mean, it's not such a huge deal these days because everything's so complicated. You have to invent some way. Our Gopal's the king of that. One way or the other, find some stuff and make it happen. And also, I was thinking about the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, where Krishna says, Jaganya Gunavrittista. And this Jaganya is described as the abominable mode of ignorance. And although we hear it maybe twice, three times, five times a day about hogs and dogs, the pigs who eat stool, and that's the standard of much of modern human civilization, is this. It kind of struck me this time how it is that a living entity who's part and parcel of Krishna can put himself in such a situation that he becomes dragged down into the abominable mode of ignorance. So much so that he takes it that eating stool is not just a necessity but a pleasure. It's quite remarkable the depths to which one can sink if one lets oneself go without the practice of devotional service. Any other thoughts from the... Yes? Mike?
I liked when it said, one must find some time for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. This is Vedic culture. Because there's a lot of people who like to say, well, what is Vedic culture really? And, you know... It's kind of like there's different opinions, but Prabhupada just really simplifies it here, and I like that definition.
That's the essence. In fact, he backs it up with this verse from the Bhagavatam 10th canto that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of from Ramananda Roy, Jnani Priyasam Vidapasyanamanta Eva Jivanti San Mukaridam Bhavadiyavartam Stani Stita Shuti Gatam Manovir. Ayaso jita dito pyasi tais trilokyam. If you just stay in your position, give up all kinds of speculation trying to understand God. Stay in your position and regularly hear. And from that, Krishna will give himself to you. He becomes conquered by the love that one develops from hearing about him. That's a nice point. What is Vedic culture? It's organizing your life around the principle of hearing and chanting. In fact, Rupa Goswami said that in the Upadeshamrita, says that in the Upadeshamrita, Tannama Rupa Charitari Sikirtananu Smrityo Kramena Rasanamana Sinyoja Tishtan Vraje Tananaragijananagami Kalam Nayeda Itupadesha Sado. That the essence of all advice is that one should organize one's life around this principle of hearing constantly. And if you, and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says that constant for neophyte means at least once a day. It has to be done at least once a day. If you skip a day, you're in trouble. Like Jeshua Hevitz, the famous violinist, he said, if I don't practice one day, I notice it. If I don't practice 2 days, my teacher notices it. If I don't practice 3 days, then everybody notices it. All my critics and the rest of the population of the world. Yes, Prabhu?
I like how Srila Prabhupada was remembering how 50 years before the printing and writing of this, in the suburbs of Kolkata, people used to regularly hear Bhagavatam every day. After work. That was just the culture. So that really painted that picture of, as we talked about, what Vedic culture is.
Yeah.
And it gives me hope, because that's not that long ago. That was less than 100 years ago from now.
Yeah, and even some places, it's still going on. I was just in Japan before I came here, and I went up to Ananta's house, and Ananta Gauranga. And the people that live next to him, the apartment next to him, they're from South India. When I walk by, there's no furniture in there, of course, because they're Indians. They don't keep furniture. And they're all sitting on the floor. There's some in the living room, some in the bedroom. The door was kind of open a little bit because it was warm. And when I walk by, they were all chanting Vishnu Sahasranam. You know, the whole house was alive with the vibration. And, you know, I looked in there, and they're absorbed. They're in samadhi. It's an electrical current, you know, that's going through the whole household, connecting them. I was just thinking that's the Vedic culture. Everybody comes together, and then they do it so regularly, they have a taste for it, and that's what sustains them. Devaki?
When I came first time to Vrindavan, 83, in Radhakund and Govardhan Parikrama, there are not much crowd, but in Radhakund, I used to see this Babaji's in. There are not so much crowd, but small kutiyas, and they used to chant all these prarthanas and Bhagavad Gita stutis, you know. Now that culture is lost. The culture was prevalent in Radha. Even Brajvasis, they used to recite Bhagavad Gita and Ramayana, Chopadis. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita have Payar in Bengali. So similarly, Ramayana, they are called Chopadis. So they used to recite this very by-hearted there. Now also many Brajvasis, they just recite this. This was a Vedic culture. But now the modern culture, they came TV especially, and they spoiled Indians, especially Indians.
Yeah.
There was a great sadhu in here, Governor and Maharaj and Asi Krishna, they knows them. His name was Pandit Gayaprasadji Maharaj. He was just in Lakshminarayan Mandir. So he told me in 1984, he told me, if you are going to Bhiksha Madhukari, you should not go to the house where there is a Kali Yuga Jhanda. The Kali Yuga flag means antenna.
That's
Kali
the flag.
Yuga flag means antenna. India nowadays, the TV become a spoiled whole culture.
Yeah.
So the
I used to go to Radhadamodar temple a lot, and there was a is there a devotee here? Oh, is that Preeti Sandarbha? Okay, set up chairs for them, make sure they're comfortable. When I used to go to Radhadamodar, there was a old bhakta, I don't know, he must have been in his 60s or something, and every day he would sit next to one of the samadhis by himself in the corner, and he'd just recite the whole Bhagavad Gita whenever I come by there. And I know once I stopped to lean in and kind of listen to what he was saying, he looked up like, get out of here. He wasn't doing it to show off or anything. It's like he had his bhav going, you know. He didn't want to be bothered. And it was really nice. Okay. More devotees. Hare Krishna, Priti Sandarbha, please come, find a seat. Are there enough chairs there?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome. Hare Krishna. So, other reflections? Because we lost Maharaj somehow or other. I marked here. This point of text number 5. While working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, when it was actually learned to live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. It's an important instruction for grihasthas, because sometimes grihasthas think, I'm embarrassed to be a grihastha, let me be a sannyasi. And then they live in the grihastha ashram, but then they treat all their family members like, you know, who are you? You know, I don't need you. I'm detached. And that tortures everybody. Of course, it could come from any of the family members, but especially from the husband. You know, there has, even if there's a sense of deep detachment within, the family members require that there's a bond and a show of affection. Otherwise, mentally they'll be tortured, and they also won't develop at all. So it's such a practical point that the Bhagavatam makes here. Yes, Giri? Giridhari.
Reflection and possibly question also, just about like maintaining the body and just reflecting sometimes at, living as a brahmachari in the temple, there's the tendency is that like basically to do service with, because you have to maintain your body, almost like the same mentality of like a job. It can become like that, and I'm just thinking like what would be better to like, because sometimes then you feel stifled in that position where you're always just doing things because you have to maintain the temple as the brahmachari in the temple, but basically I think it might be a little more peaceful for myself or for more people. Individuals to find some like simple way to just make a living where it's consistent, but you still have time to engage in service.
Yeah, that has to be taken on an individual case. Brahmachari life means to be joyful. Brahmachari life means to be happy all the time. That you feel unencumbered. It's almost like instant Brahmabhuta prasannatma, because you have no other obligation except to serve. And, you know, you wake up in the morning and there's a whole day of service ahead of you. And, you know, it's the greatest of privileges to be able to sit with your colleagues who have no other agenda in life except to serve and have prasadam and eat something simple. You're not obligated to eat fancy things or with just what Krishna left for you. And, you know, you can serve all day long and nobody can stop you. In other situations in life, even if you're some big shot, you know, people will be at you all day long. Do this, do that. You got to answer these questions. But a brahmachari is the most. It's an ideal situation of life, because you can just be anonymous and serve all day long with no problem. And if you don't feel like that, then there are other situation slots you can fit into where you can feel naturally engaged. And that's the beauty of the Varnashrama system. There's accommodation for everybody, every kind of psychological situation one might pass through in one's life, a psychological situation, so that you can be accommodated, so that you can go on and doing your service. And if you can string together a lifetime of services rendered, and it doesn't matter what ashram, and just dedicate your life, then there's something that happens that's transformational. because the whole, your whole being after some time becomes transformed, and you can see it in Vaishnavas who dedicate their whole lives to it. Their whole life becomes that. Body, mind, spirit, everything. So now that Maharaj is back, I'm going to continue. Are you okay out there? Okay, Hare Krishna. All right, thank you. Where am I? Text 6. Do you want me to continue? Yeah, I know that. Yeah. I know. Why wouldn't I know that? 6. An intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. If there are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else, he should externally agree, saying, "Yes, that is all right." But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. 7. The natural products created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be utilized to maintain the bodies and souls of all living entities. The necessities of life are of three types: those produced from the sky, from rainfall, from the earth, from the mines, the seas, or the fields, and from the atmosphere, that which is obtained suddenly and unexpectedly. Purport. We living entities in different forms are all children of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita 14.4, Sarva yoni shukanteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahad yonir aham bija pradapita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. The Supreme Lord, Krishna, is the father of all living entities in different species and forms. One who is intelligent can see that all living entities in the 8,400,000 bodily forms are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are his sons. Everything within the material and spiritual worlds is the property of the Supreme Lord. Ishavasyam midang sarvam. And therefore, everything has a relationship with him. Srila Rupa Goswami says in this regard, prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhim vastuna mumukshabhi parityago vairagyam parukukatyate. One who rejects anything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is incomplete in his renunciation. Bhaktir Samrita Sindhu. Although Mayavadi philosophers say that the material creation is false, actually it is not false. It is factual. But the idea that everything belongs to human society is false. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for everything is created by him. All living entities, being the Lord's sons, his eternal parts and parcels, have the right to use their father's property by nature's arrangement. As stated in the Upanishads, Tena Taktena Bunjita Magrita Kasisuddhanam, everyone should be satisfied with the things allotted him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one should encroach upon another's rights or property. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anasambhavaha jagnad bhavati parjanyo jagnad karma sambut bhavaha. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. When food grains are sufficiently produced, both animals and human beings can be nourished without difficulty for their maintenance. This is nature's arrangement. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Everyone is acting under the influence of material nature, and only fools think they can improve upon what God has created. The householders are specifically responsible for seeing that the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are maintained without fighting between men, communities, societies, or nations. Human society should properly utilize the gifts of God, especially the food grains that grow because of rain falling from the sky. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Jagnad Bhavati Parjanya, so that rainfall will be regulated, humanity should perform yajñas, sacrifices. Yajñas were previously performed with offerings of oblations of ghee and food grains. But in this age, of course, this is no longer possible, for the production of ghee and food grains has diminished because of the sinful life of human society. However, people should take to Krishna consciousness and chant the Hare Krishna mantra as recommended in the Shastras. Yajnaya sankirtana prayer yajantihi sumedasaha. If people throughout the world take to the Krishna consciousness movement and chant the easy sound vibration of the transcendental name and fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there will be no scarcity of rainfall. Consequently, food grains, fruits, and flowers will be properly produced, and all the necessities of life will be easily obtained. Grihasthas, or householders, should take the responsibility for organizing such natural production. It is therefore said, Tasyai vaheto prayateta kovido. An intelligent person should try to spread Krishna consciousness through the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and all the necessities of life will automatically follow. Haribo la Haribo. Text number 8. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Okay, Mars, I give up. What? Tell what was funny. The Haribo, Haribo. If you take more than your quota, then you're a thief. Purport, by God's favor, we sometimes get large quantities of food grains or suddenly receive some contribution or unexpected profit in business. In this way, we may get more money than needed. So, how should that be spent? There is no need to accumulate money in the bank merely to increase one's bank balance. Such a mentality is described in Bhagavad Gita as asuric, demoniac. Idam adya maya labdham imam prapse manoratham idam astidam api me bhavishyati punardhanam. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. The asura is concerned with how much wealth he has in the bank today and how it will increase tomorrow. But unrestricted accumulation of wealth is not permitted either by the Shastra or in the modern age by the government. Actually, if one has more than one requires for his necessity, the extra money should be spent for Krishna. According to the Vedic civilization, it should all be given to the Krishna consciousness movement, as ordered by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:27. Yakaroshi yadashnashi yachjohoshi dadasi yat yatapasyasi kaunteya tatkurishra mararparam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all the austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Grihasthas should spend extra money only for the Krishna consciousness movement. The grihasthas should give contributions for constructing temples of the Supreme Lord and for preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam or Krishna consciousness all over the world. Bhagavad Gita. The grihasthas should give contributions for constructing temples of the Supreme Lord and for preaching of Srimad Bhagavad Gita or Krishna consciousness all over the world. Srinvan Bhagavato Bhikshanam Avatara Katamritam. Avatar Katar. In the Shastras, the Puranas, and other Vedic literatures, there are so many narrations describing the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone should hear them again and again. For example, even if we read the entire Bhagavad Gita every day, all 18 chapters, in each reading we shall find a new explanation. That is the nature of transcendental literature. The Krishna consciousness movement therefore affords one an opportunity to spend his extra earnings for the benefit of all human society by expanding Krishna consciousness. In India especially, we see hundreds and thousands of temples that were constructed by the wealthy men of society who did not want to be called thieves and be punished. Shall we read this when we do our fundraiser in Baltimore? This verse is very important. As stated here, one who accumulates more money than needed is a thief, and by the laws of nature, he will be punished. Hare Krishna Devaki Prabhu. So nice to see you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Haribol. One who acquires more money than necessary becomes desirous of enjoying material comforts more and more. Materialists are inventing so many artificial necessities, and those who have money, being allured by such artificial necessities, try to accumulate money to possess more and more. This is the idea of modern economic development. Everyone is engaged in earning money, and the money is kept in the bank, which then offers money to the public. In this cycle of activities, everyone is engaged in getting more and more money. And therefore, the ideal goal of human life is being lost. Concisely, it may be said that everyone is a thief and is liable to be punished. Punishment by the laws of nature takes place in the cycle of birth and death. No one dies fully satisfied by the fulfillment of material desires, for that is not possible. Therefore, at the time of one's death, one is very sorry being unable to fulfill his desires. By the laws of nature, one is then offered another body to fulfill his unsatisfied desires. And upon taking birth again, accepting another material body, one voluntarily accepts the threefold miseries of life. All right, I'll take it.
Can you put this verse into a little bit of context, because this is a summary of Varnashram, but in passing, one could look at this verse and it says, one may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together, and then anything over and above that makes you a thief. One could look at that statement and say, well, why is someone wearing a watch? Why does somebody have, you know, this, that, and one could be very critical and say, well, this is above and beyond what you need to keep body and soul together, so therefore you're a thief. And on the strength of this verse, of course, it doesn't work that way, and that's not appropriate, because persons have different mental constitutions, and one has to have a certain living space and so forth. But I don't want to put words in your mouth. Can you help me understand how to put this in a greater context of what is actually...
Well, what's wrong with wearing a watch? I mean, you know, people have to know time, you know. You don't have to wear, you know, $1 billion watch. Or maybe sometimes you do. I brought that up last year when Dhananar Maharaj talked about, you know, wearing a 100-rupee watch. First of all, they break every month right when you need them. And second of all, then... I remember years ago when we were trying to make an impression on people in the airports that we weren't just little punks, so we wore nicer clothes and nicer watches because it was utilitarian. And when we did it, our purpose really was to show that, we're as good or better than you. And we can sport material things, but we're into this, and you should be too. And, you know, and to some degree it worked. So.
To come and ask us to come on to their companies, remember?
Yeah.
Regularly.
I still think, like, I mean, I understand what you're saying and I accept it, but I still think, you know, somebody who wanted to could take this verse and say, well, listen, so-and-so, why do you have an aquarium in your house? Why do you have decorative rock formations in your driveway? Why do you have this or that? That's beyond what is required to keep body and soul together, therefore on the strength of
life. Not necessarily. I mean, human life doesn't mean living in a cell. You should have a garden. I mean, every human needs a garden and a library and things like that. Like if you look at Vedic civilization, they provide green open spaces. The architecture is meant to please the mind. You know, there's vastu involved, so that it actually makes you feel right. And these are necessities. Prabhupada talks about it in the first canto. You have to have jewels. You have to have spices and herbs. I mean, what would our life be without Himalayan pink salt? People sailed across the ocean trying to find that stuff back in the old days because they didn't have anything. So, you know, human life doesn't just mean, the bare necessities don't necessarily mean living in a cell with no pictures and no plants and even animals. You know, humans like animals and animals like humans. They like to hang out together and there's nothing wrong with it. It's a natural part of human life to be healthy and have the kinds of things around you that you need. And everybody has a different kind of quota on that, too. You also have to, one person judging another may not be very helpful unless the person asked you to consult him and say, you come through and help me clean out the stuff I don't need. And that happens a lot. Like people, they get too much, there's atyahara going on, and they'll even hire somebody to come and say, you don't need all this stuff, you should get rid of it. That's professional organizers do that all the time. People write books about it. But each person has to self-regulate and figure out how much they actually need so that they're not over-collecting and overburdened by so many things. Imho. Gopal Prabhu?
How to reconcile the Ishavashyam principle versus Atyahara, over-collecting, over-gathering.
That was a question or an answer? It was a question.
Yeah, I'm kind of stuck in the middle of that sometimes.
You should do an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, and get the kinds of things that you need to live a natural, healthy life. Kamasya nendriya pritir labu jivete yavatha. One should live a healthy life, but only so that you can inquire about the absolute truth. Prabhupada talks about this in the eighth canto too. He says one has to have sensual strength and balance in one's life in order to inquire about the absolute truth. If you feel depleted, and it's one man's food's another man's poison. Some people, and at certain stages of life, it may be different for each person. At a certain point in life, somebody may feel very natural having nothing and sleeping on the floor, and that makes them joyful. And at other times, they may need a few things because they're in a more creative period, they want a little more control over the energy, and they need a little more space to do that. And then later on in life, when they've dealt with all the energies and they thought, I really don't need anything, it's all internalized, they may then give those things up. And Prabhupada talked about it earlier. He said, even a sannyasi can become attached to the symbols of sannyas. He said, it's not as strong as attachment as householders, but still, it's there. And so the main point is to become internally satisfied, joyful.
If this principle that he's talking about isn't accepted, then how are you going to rationalize the fact that among the ever liberated associates of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, there are kings that live in a more opulent way than we can even imagine, and a person that lives with nothing that we can't imagine? So the main thing is the consciousness. The main thing is the Krishna consciousness. It's not to be judged by, the external. Because you may be a king and you may be a greater devotee than a yogi. Look at Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. You know, he was a king and the king of the world. In Durvasa, he was such a great yogi and austere, and he could go anywhere by his mystic power. But you know, Ambarish defeated him just by standing there, waiting for him to come back. You know, so that's the balance.
I was thinking that anybody who was born in a particular or grew up in a particular socioeconomic environment, that is natural for him. Maybe for others it's, wow, it's too much. But for him it's natural, and above that would be too much for him.
Yeah, do you remember what Prabhupada said when the Americans first came to
India with Prabhupada? He would he kind of chuckled at us and he said, "You Americans, wherever you go, you'll end up living in a certain standard of living, wherever you are." You know, he didn't like ridicule us and tell us you have to stop that.
That was in the context of the on that morning walk, because the devotees pointed out how the people had been sublet on, they had built apartments, the government for the homeless people, and then the homeless people moved out of their apartments and sublet them to others, and then they moved back on the street. And Prabhupada said that's because that's their karma, to live on the street. And he said, then he said, just like you Americans, said you come here to Calcutta, but no matter where you go, you still live like Americans, because that's your karma. You're in India, but you don't really touch it. Prabhu?
I was just thinking, just the example of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. You know, when they saw him, they were like, no way, he can be a pure devotee, slick hair, opium living. And then when they started reciting verses from Bhagavatam, he just completely lost it.
Out of spiritual emotion.
Yeah.
I don't think Asamya Prash Prabhu is satisfied yet. Let's let him have a follow-up question and then we'll move on.
I'm satisfied by the explanations that contextualize it in terms of bhakti. But as a principle, it seems like this verse is therefore not applicable. Like no one can take this verse and say, now I can judge a situation, because it seems as such a subtle thing that basically it comes down to the individual must look at themselves and say, am I actually, really, is this atyahara, or is this legitimately what I need because of, like Havi Prabhu said, my socioeconomic status, my karma, my varna and ashram, what I need for my service to keep my mind peaceful. It just seems like that's my only conclusion, is that it's, among other verses here, may not be applicable as a how do I put it? Yeah, it's not a regulatory thing. It's more like an individual thing. Individual. I don't know if I'd use the word arbitrary, but it's highly subjective. It's so subjective that only oneself and one's guides and gurus can actually apply it, I guess, is my only conclusion.
There it is. I think it's a fine conclusion. Where are we now? Besides Govardhan. 9? Starting at 9? One should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes, birds, and flies exactly like one's own son. How little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals. Purport. One who is in Krishna consciousness understands there is no difference between the animals and the innocent children in one's home. Even in ordinary life, it is our practical experience that a household dog or cat is regarded on the same level as one's children, without any envy. Like children, the unintelligent animals are also sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore a Krishna conscious person, even though a householder, should not discriminate between children and poor animals. Unfortunately, modern society has devised many means for killing animals in different forms of life. For example, in the agricultural fields, there may be many mice, flies, and other creatures that disturb production, and sometimes they are killed by pesticides. In this verse, however, such killing is forbidden. every living being should be nourished by the food given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Human society should not consider itself the only enjoyer of all the properties of God. Rather, men should understand that all the other animals also have a claim to God's property. In this verse, even the snake is mentioned, indicating that a householder should not be envious even of a snake. If everyone is fully satisfied by eating food that is a gift from the Lord, why should there be envy between one living being and another? In modern days, people are very much inclined toward communistic ideas of society, but we do not think that there can be any better communistic idea than that which is explained in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in the communistic countries, the poor animals are killed without consideration, although they also should have the right to take their allotted food with which to live. Context. Text 10. Even if one is a householder rather than a brahmachari, a sannyasi or a vanaprastha, one should not endeavor very hard for religiosity, economic development, or satisfaction of the senses. Even in householder life, one should be satisfied to maintain body and soul together with whatever is available with minimum endeavor, according to place and time, by the grace of the Lord. One should not engage oneself in ugra karma. Purport. In human life, there are four principles to be fulfilled: artha, kama, and moksha. Religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. First, one should be religious, observing various rules and regulations, and one must earn some money for maintenance of his family and the satisfaction of his senses. The most important ceremony for sense gratification is marriage, because sexual intercourse is one of the principal necessities of the material body. Yanmai tu nadi kriyamedi sukham hitucham. Although sexual intercourse in life, both animals and men require some sense gratification because of material propensities. One should be satisfied with married life and not expend energy for extra sense gratification or sex life. As for economic development, the responsibility for this should be entrusted mainly to the Vaishyas and Grihastha. Human society should be divided into Dvarnas and Ashramas: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Economic development is necessary for Grihasthas. Brahmana Grihasthas should be satisfied with a life of Adhyapana, Yajana, and Yajana, being learned scholars, teaching others to be scholars, learning how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, and also teaching others how to worship how to worship Lord Vishnu or even the demigods. A brahmana should do this without remuneration, but he is allowed to accept charity from a person whom he teaches how to be a human being. As for the kshatriyas, they are supposed to be kings of the land, and the land should be distributed to the Vaishyas for agricultural activities, cow protection, and trade. Shudras must work. Sometimes they should engage in occupational duties as cloth manufacturers, weavers, blacksmiths, goldsmiths, brassmiths, and so on, or else they should engage in hard labor to produce food grains. These are the different occupational duties by which men should earn their livelihood, and in this way, human society should be simple. At the present moment, however, everyone is engaged in technological advancement, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as ugra karma, extremely severe endeavor. This ugra karma is the cause of agitation within the human mind. This ugra karma is the cause of agitation within the human mind. Men are engaging in many sinful activities and becoming degraded by opening slaughterhouses, breweries, and cigarette factories, as well as nightclubs and other establishments for sense enjoyment. In this way, they are spoiling their lives. In all of these activities, of course, householders are involved, and therefore it is advised here, with the use of the word api, that even though one is a householder, One should not engage himself in severe hardships. One's means of livelihood should be extremely simple. As for those who are not grihasthas, the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, they don't have to do anything but strive for advancement in spiritual life. This means that three-fourths of the entire population should stop sense gratification and simply be engaged in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. Only one-fourth of the population should be grihastha, and that should be according to the laws of restricted sense gratification. The grihasthas, vanaprasthas, brahmacharis, and sannyasis should endeavor together with their total energy to become Krishna conscious. This type of civilization is called Daiva Varnashrama. One of the objectives of the Krishna consciousness movement is to establish this Daiva Varnashrama, but not to encourage so-called Varnashrama without scientifically organized endeavor by human society.
Yes, sir.
Is this proposal practical? The one to divide society in a way that only one-fourth of it would be able to be in this context and also very restricted. Is this something that we will see sometime in history?
Well, you could have a household with four people in it. So one person could work and maintain the household, and the rest of the three could do spiritual.
Well, like back in California, we have a house, a special house, and maybe, I hope the landlord's not watching, but we got like six people living there. Two or three of them go out and work all day long. They have a professional job, and they make the money. And the rest of them go out and just do preaching and spiritual stuff. So they live in one house, and they divide the labor up. Because some of them, they're already trained to do professional work, and they have the propensity to do it too, and they would like to have a little extra. The other ones are already done with that, or they haven't gotten into it yet, one of the two. There's several on both sides. And so they're not concerned with earning money by having a professional job, and they're free to preach all day. And they coexist quite nicely in one house. So if you could do it in a house, you could do it in a village. And if you could do it in a village, you could do it in a little town. And if you could do it in a town, you could do it in a city. If you could do it in a city, you could do it in the world. Little divisions of, according to their propensity, but it doesn't take much.
Another thing that crossed my mind along the same vein as Javi's point, when we hear one quarter, it doesn't necessarily mean in terms of the gross numbers of human beings, and one quarter of them are going to be sannyasis, one quarter of them are going to be this. It's always going to be a vast majority or bigger number that are going to be grihasthas than the other three. There's only going to be a much smaller number that are going to be brahmanas. So when we hear that number, we say, is that practical? There's going to be, 1 billion sannyasis and 1 billion... vanaprasas and 1 billion brahmacharis and 1 billion grahasas. It doesn't work like that. Just another way to look at it.
George Harrison, he did that song. It's going to take time.
Yeah.
Maharaj, what you said is exactly what I was thinking when I read that. So my question is, how do we then take...
Maybe there's hope for me then.
So my question is, how do we understand what Srila Prabhupada is saying? What does he actually mean, if not literally 1 billion sannyasis on the planet?
I have an answer for that. It requires a little intelligence.
Well, you have intelligence. Can you help me understand? Or is it just, it'll come to us in time?
We don't have any Cupid dolls here, but we have...
Not yet.
Thank you. No, the point I'm making is that you're seeing, each one of us is seeing it with a certain level of realization and intelligence or knowledge or ignorance. You know, so we can't expect that everyone's going to understand it in the same way. And also, a person who, as they advance in spiritual life, when they read that, they'll understand more and more and more the same thing. That's why I'm a promoter of not giving up reading Srila Prabhupada's books, as we heard Prabhupada say a few purports ago. Even if you read the whole Bhagavad Gita, 18 chapters, every day, you still shouldn't stop, because every time you read it, you're going to get something new. So it's not that just because a person can't understand that, you know, the first time he reads, or even the second time, or even the third time, that he won't be able to understand it in a way that it will satisfy him and allow him to apply it into his life and see it in terms of human society with the intelligence that he gets from hearing and chanting and hearing and chanting and hearing and chanting and hearing and chanting from now until forever. Do I get this?
I accept that, but on the basis of that, as somebody who has inferior realization, I would like to know if anybody has greater realization on what Prabhupada actually means by that particular statement,
Can you hear the statement again? For the information, please.
Sure. The statement was the one that Habib brought up about. I'm not mistaken, it's the statement that says that only 1/4 of the population should be grihastha, and that should be according to laws of restricted sense gratification. He didn't actually say that the other four are divided exactly in four, but that, anyway, so he says only 1/4 of the population should be grihastha. So, I just, in my understanding of Vedic history, which is so limited that I submit to everyone else in the room on this, I don't see that ever being the case, except maybe in Sakya Yuga, that only 1/4 were grihasthas. It just seems difficult for me.
No, I'm just saying that 1/4 doesn't mean divide in four equal parts. 1/4 means, in terms of varnashrama, there are always four varnas and ashramas, so it's always 1/4. So it depends on the specifics of the time, places, circumstances. It's like in many places they are.
Don't eat it all at once.
In many places are given some proportions in scriptures. In some purports I've seen different examples in certain yugas how the society was divided on according to the four varnas and ashramas. And during the Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dvapara Yuga, and Satya Yuga, it's not the same. Yeah, but then the proportion, the ratio between Brahmanas and Kshatriyas is not the same in Treta Yuga and Dvapara Yuga and in Kali Yuga. It's not same ratio.
Correct.
The answer is, it all comes out in the wash.
But if you average all together, then it's going to So
that means we've already fulfilled this sentence, because 1/4 of the population in who are following Varnashram are grihasthas, right? So all we have to do is get everyone to follow Varnashram, and then that's.
I like that answer.
Is that what we're saying?
That's a good idea. I think we can all accept that.
Sadhu.
Wait. Oh.
I thought it was a serious question. I just.
Can we finish?
Yeah.
Okay,
11.
Take that little bug thing that's on the. There's an extra one on the shelf there. And plug it in where the bubble is up here.
That's what you're looking for?
Here. I got it here. Unplug the dongle competitor instead. Brandon, we got it.
Unplug the dongle? Then how will we have our...
Unplug the dongle. It'll last for a little while.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't constantly charge.
Really? It doesn't.
It's kind of rechargeable.
Will it blow up? And will it, if you overcharge it, will it blow up?
Okay. So now we have our.
That's what I. We're continuing with our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're on Canto 7, Chapter 14, Ideal Family Life. We're taking up with the reading, with Keshav Bharti Maharaj's reading at text number 11. Persons and untouchables, including chandalas, dog eaters, should all be maintained with their proper necessities, which should be contributed by the householders. Even one's wife at home, with whom one is most intimately attached, should be offered for the reception of guests and people in general. Purport. Although in modern society the dog is accepted as a part of one's household paraphernalia, in the Vedic system of household life, the dog is untouchable. As mentioned here, a dog may be maintained with proper food, but it cannot be allowed to enter one's house, what to speak of the bedroom. Outcasts or untouchable chandalas should also be provided with the necessities for life. The word used in this connection is yata, which means as much as deserved. The outcasts should be given money with which to indulge in more than they need, for otherwise they will misuse it. At the present moment, for example, low-class men are generally paid quite amply. But instead of using their money to cultivate knowledge and advance in life, such low-class men use their extra money for wine drinking and similar sinful activities. As mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Chattuvanyamiyachishtam gunakamabhibhagashaha. There must be four divisions of human society according to the work and qualities of men. Men with the lowest qualities cannot do any work that requires higher intelligence. However, although such a division of men must exist according to their quality and work, it is suggested herewith that everyone must have the necessities of life. The communists of the present day are in favor of supplying the necessities of life to everyone, but they consider only the human beings and not the lower animals. The Bhagavatam's principles are so broad, however, that it recommends that the necessities of life be supplied to everyone, man or animal, regardless of good or bad qualities. The idea of giving even one's wife to the service of the public is that one's intimate relationship with his wife or one's excessive attachment for his wife, by which one thinks his wife to be his better half or to be identical with himself. Must gradually be given up. As formerly suggested, the idea of ownership, even of one's family, must be abandoned. The dream of material life is the cause of bondage in the cycle of birth and death, and therefore one should give up this dream. Consequently, in the human form of life, one's attachment for his wife should be given up as suggested herein. Text 12. One so seriously considers one's wife to be his own that he sometimes kills himself for her, or kills others, including even his parents, or his spiritual master or teacher. Whoa! Therefore, if one can give up his attachment to such a wife, he conquers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never conquered by anyone. Purport.
Every husband is too much attached to his wife. Therefore, to give up one's connection with his wife is extremely difficult. But if one can somehow or other give it up for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the Lord Himself, although not able to be conquered, control of a devotee. And if the Lord is pleased with a devotee, what is there? It's unobtainable. Why should one not give up his affection for his wife and children and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Where is the loss of anything material? Household life means attachment to one's wife, whereas sannyas means detachment from one's wife and attachment to Krishna. Text 13. Through proper deliberation, one should give up attraction to his wife's body, because that body will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool, or ashes. What is the value of this insignificant body? How much greater is the Supreme Being who is all-pervading like the sky? Purport. Here also the same point is stressed. One should give up attachment for his wife, or in other words, for sex life. If one is intelligent, he can think of his wife's body as nothing but a lump of matter that will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool, or ashes. In different societies, there are different ways of dealing with the human body at the time of the funeral ceremony. In some societies, the body is given up, is given to the vultures to be eaten, and therefore the body is merely abandoned, and in that case, the body is consumed by small insects. In sometimes,
is that something else?
Sometimes the body is merely abandoned, and in that case, the body is consumed by small insects. In some societies, the body is immediately burned after death, and thus it becomes ashes. In any case, if one intelligently considers the constitution of the body and the soul beyond it, what is the value of the body? Antavanta ime deha nityasyukta sharirinaha. The body may perish at any moment, but the soul is eternal. If one gives up attachment for the body and increases his attachment for the spirit soul, his life is successful. It is merely a matter of deliberation. Text 14. An intelligent person should be satisfied with eating prasad, food offered to the Lord, or with performing the five different kinds of yajna, panchasanya. By such activities, one can give up attachment for the body and so-called proprietorship with reference to the body. When one is able to do this, he is firmly fixed in the position of a Mahatma. Purport. Nature already has an arrangement to feed us. By the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is an arrangement for eatables for every living entity within the 8,400,000 forms of life. Eko bahunam yo vididati karman. Every living entity has to eat something. And in fact, the necessities for his life have already been provided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord has provided food for both the elephant and the ant. All living beings are living at the cost of the Supreme Lord, and therefore one who is intelligent should not work very hard for material comforts. Rather, one should save his energy for advancing the Krishna consciousness. All created things in the sky, on land, and in the sea belong to the Supreme. All created things in the sky, in the air, on land, and in the sea, belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And every living being is provided with food. Therefore, one should not be very much anxious about economic development and unnecessarily wasting time and energy with the risk of falling down in the cycle of birth and death. Text 15. Every day one should worship the Supreme Being
who is situated in everyone's heart, and on this basis one should separately worship the demigods, the saintly persons, ordinary human beings, and living entities, one's forefathers, and oneself. In this way, one is able to worship the Supreme Being in the core of everyone's heart. Sixteen. When one is enriched with wealth and knowledge, which are under his full control, and by means of which he can perform yajna, or please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one must perform sacrifices, offering oblations to the fire according to the directions of the Shastras. In this way, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. If a grihastha or householder is sufficiently educated in Vedic knowledge, and has become sufficiently rich to offer worship to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he must perform yajnas as directed by the authorized scriptures. Bhagavad Gita 3.9 clearly says, yajna tat karmano nyatra loko yam karma vandanaha. Everyone should be engaged in his occupational duties, but the result of these duties should be offered for sacrifice to satisfy the Supreme Lord. If one is fortunate enough to possess transcendental knowledge as well as the money with which to perform sacrifices, one must do it according to the directions given in the Shastras. As said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.352, Kritaya Jayato Vishnu Tirtayam Jatato Mukai Dvapare Paricharyayam Kalota Dari Kirtanat. The entire Vedic civilization aims at satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This was possible in Satya Yuga by meditation upon the Supreme Lord within the core of one's heart, and in the Treta Yuga by the performance of costly yajnas. The same goal could be achieved in Dwapara Yuga by worship of the Lord in the temple. And in this age of Kali, one can achieve the same goal by performing Sankirtan Yajna. Therefore, one who has education and wealth must use them to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by helping the Sankirtan movement that has already begun, the Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement. All educated and wealthy persons must join this movement, since money and education are meant for service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If money and education are not engaged in the service of the Lord, these valuable assets must be engaged in the service of Maya. The education of so-called scientists, philosophers, and poets is now engaged in the service of Maya, and the wealth of the rich is also engaged in Maya's service. The service of Maya, however, creates a chaotic condition in the world. Therefore, the wealthy man and the educated man should sacrifice their knowledge and opulence by dedicating them for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord and joining the Sankirtan movement. Jagmai Sankirtana Prayera Yajantihi Sumeda Saha. 17. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is the enjoyer of sacrificial offerings. Yet although His Lordship eats the oblations offered in the fire, my dear King, He is still more satisfied when nice food made of grains and ghee is offered to Him through the mouths of qualified brahmanas. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.9, Jagnar tat kamano nyatra loko yam karma vandanaha. All fruitive activities should be performed for sacrifice, which should be directed toward pleasing Krishna. As stated elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram. He is the Supreme Lord and enjoyer of everything. However, although sacrifice may be offered to please Krishna, He is more pleased when grains and ghee, instead of being offered in the fire, are prepared as prasada and distributed, first to the brahmanas and then to others. This system pleases Krishna more than anything else. Furthermore, at the present time, there is very little chance to offer sacrifices by pouring oblations of food grains and ghee into the fire. Especially in India, there's practically no ghee. For everything that should be done with ghee, people use a certain type of oil preparation. Oil, however, is never recommended for offering in a sacrificial fire.
In Kali Yuga, the available quantity of food, grains, and ghee is gradually diminishing, and people are embarrassed that they cannot produce sufficient ghee and food grains. Under the circumstances, the Shastras enjoin Jagnai Sankirtana Prayer Yajantihi Sumeya Saha. In this age, those who are intellectual offer yajna or perform sacrifices to the Sankirtan movement. Everyone should join the Sankirtan movement, offering to the fire of this movement the oblations of his knowledge and riches. Our Sankirtan movement, our Hare Krishna movement, in our Sankirtan movement, our Hare Krishna movement, we offer sumptuous prasada to the deity and later distribute the same prasada to the brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, and then to the people in general. Krishna's prasada is offered to the brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and the prasada of the brahmins and Vaishnavas is offered to the general populace. This kind of sacrifice, chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and distribution of prasada, is the most perfect and bona fide way of offering sacrifice for the pleasure of yajna or Vishnu. 18. Therefore, my dear king, first offer prasada unto the brahmanas and the demigods, and after sumptuously feeding them, you may distribute prasada to other living entities according to your ability. In this way, you will be able to worship all living entities, or, in other words, the supreme living entity within every living entity. Bandar? Bandar. Bandar, yeah. Bandar Seva. Yeah.
I tried to put it there.
Oh, Marge was going to say something. No, it's really good. It's about monkeys. No, the monkey thing's good. Okay, you do a monkey thing and he'll respond to it.
So we see here in Govardhan, pilgrims feed the monkeys bananas and dry chickpeas.
Offer without judgment or comment.
And then I was saying, well, they do that because they think that the monkeys are relatives of Hanuman, they're descendants of Hanuman. That's actually how they think. When we were doing the refurbishment of this place and we made the boundary wall and made the, you know, I wanted to put kind of like a very light electrical, not to hurt them, just to make scare them. And the devotees wouldn't do it. They said, no, we can't do that. The locals will kill us because they're relatives of Hanuman and they worship them. Next time they push you off the roof, you know, rethink it.
Shriji got pushed off the roof by a monkey. It's happened several times recently. They'll chuck you off the roof. Not here. But in Vrindavan, you know, where there's a little open roof area and you come out and the monkey's standing there. Go. 18. Therefore, my dear king, first offer prasada. Did I read that?
Yeah.
19. Purport. To distribute prasada to all living entities, the process is that we must first offer prasada to the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, for the demigods are represented by the brahmanas. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, will be worshipped. This is the Vedic system of offering prasada. Whenever there is a ceremony for distribution of prasada, the prasada is offered first to the brahmanas, then to the children and old men, then to the women, and then to the animals like dogs and other domestic animals. When it is said that Narayana, the Supreme Being, is situated in everyone's heart, this does not mean that everyone has become Narayana, or that a particular poor man has become Narayana. Such a conclusion is rejected herein. 19. A Brahmana who is sufficiently rich must offer oblations to the forefathers during the dark moon fortnight in the latter part of the month of Bhadra. Similarly, he should offer oblations to the relatives of the forefathers during the Mahalaya ceremonies in the month of Ashvina. The, Mah- The Mahalaya festivals are observed on the 15th day of the dark fortnight of the month of Ashvana and mark the last day of the Vedic lunar calendar. One should perform the Shraddha ceremony on the Makara Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move north.
Is that coming up now?
That's when it moves into...
what's the wind now?
It's
going to
get to a beautiful day.
Scorpio, 8th, 9th, 10th. No, Scorpio's 8. Scorpio's 8, Sagittarius 9, Capricorn is 10. Scorpio's after Libra. Scorpio's 8, Libra is 7, Virgo is 6, Sagittarius is 9, Capricorn is 10, Aquarius is, Aquarius is 10, and which implies is 12.
Can we feel it?
Can you feel it coming? Da, 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 da. It's gonna set you back on your heel. Oh, that's Sandra Champlin, 1967. What? Will you feel it?
Well,
it depends on where you are and what's going on. And again, it depends on who you are. And you don't feel anything except for love for Krishna. I've seen it. I'm watching it with my own eyes. Wait. Let me look at this. Let me see this. I'll read your poem. I'm not only an astrologer, but a palmist. Come on. Oh. One should perform the Shraddha ceremony on the Makara Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move north, or on the Karkata Sankranti, the day when the sun begins to move south. That's Cancer. One should also perform this ceremony on the Mesha Sankranti day and the Tula Sankranti day in the yoga named Vatipata, on that day in which three lunar tithis are conjoined during an eclipse of either the sun or the moon, or the moon or the sun, on the 12th lunar day and in the Shravana Nakshatra. One should perform this ceremony on the Akshaya Tritiya day, on the ninth lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Kartik.
Oh,
yeah, too bad. On the four Ashtakas in the winter season and the cool season, and on the seventh lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Magh, during the conjunction of Magha Nakshatra and the full moon day, and on the days when the moon is completely full, or not quite completely full, when these days are conjoined with the nakshatras, from which the names of certain months are derived, one should also perform the Shraddha ceremony. It sounds like you should do it all the time, and that's what's happening here. One should also perform the Shraddha ceremony of the 12th lunar day, when it is in conjunction with any of the nakshatras named Anuradha, Shravana, Uttara Phalguni, Uttara Shraddha, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Again, one should perform this ceremony when the 11th lunar day is in conjunction with either Uttara Phalguni, Uttara Shraddha, or Uttara Bhadrapada. Finally, one should perform this ceremony on days conjoined with one's own birth star. Finally, one should perform this ceremony on days conjoined with one's own birth star, Dhumma Nakshatra, or
with the Shravana Nakshatra. He's calculating all these things in his mind. You see that he's going like, getting his wheel, you know, abacus. Purport. The word ayana means path or going. The 6 months when the sun moves toward the north are called Uttarayana, on the northern path, and the 6 months when it moves south are called Dakshinayana, that's in the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, or the southern path. These are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, 8:24 and 8:25. The first day when the sun begins to move north and enter the zodiacal sign of Capricorn is called Makara Sankranti. And the first day when the sun begins to move south and enter the sign of Cancer is called Karkata Sankranti. On these 2 days of the year, one should perform the Shraddha ceremony. Vishuva, or Vishuva Sankranti, means Mesha Sankranti, on the day on which the sun enters the sign Aries. Tula Sankranti is the day on which the sun enters the sign Libra. Both of these days occur only once a year. The word yoga refers to a certain relationship between the sun and moon as they move in the sky. There are 27 different degrees of yoga, of which the 17th is called Vitipata. On the day when this occurs, one should perform the Shraddha ceremony. A Tithi, or lunar day, consists of the distance between the longitude of the sun and that of the moon. Sometimes a Tithi is less than 24 hours. When it starts after sunrise on a certain day and ends before the sunrise of the following day, the previous Tithi and the following Tithi both touch the 24-hour day between the sunrises. This is called Chaha Sparsha, or a day touched by the same portion of three Tithis. This is why sometimes we can't fast on the day that's actually Ekadasi. Then we do it on Dwadasi because the Tithi overlaps, touches. Yes. Srila Jiva Goswami has given quotations from many shastras stating that the Shraddha ceremony of oblations to the forefathers should not be performed on Ekadashi Tithi. When the Tithi of the death anniversary follows on the Ekadashi day, the Shraddha ceremony should be held not on Ekadashi, but on the next day, or Dwadashi. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana it is said, Ye kuvanti mahi pala shaddham chai gahi dhime trayasti narakam yanti datta bhokta pivarakaha. If one performs the Shraddha ceremony of oblations to the forefathers on the Ekadashi Tithi, then the performer, the forefathers for whom the Shraddha is observed, and the Purohit, or the family priest, who encourages the ceremony, all go to hell. Well, there you have it. Text 24. There it is. All of these seasonal times are considered extremely auspicious for humanity. At such times, one should perform all auspicious activities, for by such activities, a human being attains success in his short duration of life. Purport. When one comes to the human form of life through natural evolution, one must then take the responsibility for further progress. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:25, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, one who worships the demigods can be promoted to their planets. Yanti Madhya Jinopimam, and if one practices devotional service to the Lord, he goes back home, back to Godhead. In the human form of life, therefore, one is meant to act auspiciously in order to return home back to Godhead. Devotional service, however, does not depend on material conditions. Ahitakiya pratiyata,
Of course, for those who are engaged in fruitive activities on the material platform, the times and seasons mentioned above are extremely congenial. It's safe, right?
Yeah.
Safe. You slid under the tag.
Similar to Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, where Krishna describes how the yogi.
Similar to what Krishna says in chapter 8, when Krishna says that the yogi calculates the time to leave the world in order to attain the most desired destination. But after describing that, Krishna says that the devotees are not concerned. They go on with practicing their devotional service and they depend on Krishna for that.
Precisely.
Okay?
Precisely. Do you remember the verse?
Yeah. Naite sriti partha janam yogi vayati kashana tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanu smaru yujaca na yogi
yukto
yogi yukto no naite sriti partha janam yogi vayati kashana tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yogi yukto bhavarjana
yogi yukto bhavarjana yogi yukto
narupamase atato palabhyate nanto nacharya. No, I mean, what's the last verse? Yagyeshu
yagyeshu. No.
Huh?
Vaneshu vedeshu.
Vedeshu yagyeshu tapasu chayva daneshu yapunya palam pratishtam adyeti tat sarvam idam vaditva yogi param stanam upaiti chadyam om tat sariti srimad bhagavad gita.
Text 25. During these periods of seasonal change, if one bathes in the Ganges, in the Jamuna, or in other sacred place, or in another sacred place, if one chants, offers fire sacrifices, or execute vows, or if one worships the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas, the forefathers, the demigods, and the living entities in general, whatever he gives in charity yields a permanently beneficial result.
Slid under the tag. You slid into the tank. You're safe.
Yes, questions?
Yeah, I guess first I was just feeling so much gratitude for Prabhupada for making things easy and simple, because growing up in India, you know, saw so much of this and it was so off-putting, and to come to Krishna consciousness and
what did you see? Like in your family, there was
this day you don't do this and that day you're not supposed to do that, and it was just, yeah, it was just very, very unattractive growing up, and then Krishna consciousness was so simple and so easy, so really appreciate the simplicity. But I guess my question is that the Bhagavatam starts by saying that it's rejecting all materially motivated religions. And so when we see these kind of verses where it seems to talk about Shraddha and worshipping forefathers or worshipping the demigods, how do we understand that?
Well, keep in mind the context. We're within the Varnashrama right now. Mm. And, under the whole topic of Varnashrama, we understand that by performing your dharma in a particular ashram properly, then you're able to advance. Yesham tuntakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dunva mohanir mukta bhajanti mam dridavrta. Those who are not sinful means they're following, for instance, the pancha yagya is there because we naturally perform sinful activities and so forth. And those who are forming their dharmas properly are trending towards the sattva gun, and they're also controlling their senses, and they're more able to advance in devotional service because of being within the daiva varnashrama.
I'd like to
in the context of what they, like you're saying, in the context, then it says, but you don't have to do all those things in the purport if you're doing devotional service. You don't have to, there's no hard and fast rules for that. That's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So everything that is in the Bhagavatam, even if it seems like it's doing something material, it always ends up connecting it to devotional service.
and putting it in proper perspective.
Yeah, the Payavrata vow was an example of how, you know, somebody who had a material desire and then a propensity to follow rules and regulations and vows, but then because it was connected to Vishnu, ultimately got purified by performing the rituals and so forth. And the Varnashram is all based on ways in which ordinary people, in their ordinary occupations, as Krishna says in the Gita, can attain perfection in this lifetime. Because, you know, in a roundabout way, if you're following the Varnashram, you're pleasing Krishna. Much the way that if you're following the traffic laws back home in the United States, you're pleasing Donald Trump. Well, because he's the president of the United States, so he represents the leader of the you know, organized system within America. And if, you know, on certain level you're doing that, then you're in sync. That's the idea, to be in sync with the desire of the Supreme through the Varnashrama. Through your work, you get purified. But it all has to be connected to Vishnu. Otherwise, we know from those two verses, Mukabahuru Paribhya Purushasyashama Sahai Chatvaro Jagnini Varna Gunar Vipradeo Pratak. And the next one is? The next one says that if you're doing Varnashram and you don't connect it to Vishnu, it's useless. It doesn't have any effect at all. Mukabahuru Paribhya Purushasyashamaisaha Chatvaro Jagnari Varna Guna Viprajayo Pratak. Then Tapajananti Stana Brashta Padantyada. Translation.
Is this from 11.5.3? Translation for both of them?
Just for this one.
If any of the members of the four varnas and four ashramas fail to worship or intentionally disrespect the personality of Godhead, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. It's from Chamasamuni.
Follow up.
Just an additional point is, I find it very interesting that the Bhagavatam starts by saying it's meant for paramhansas and people who are completely free from envy, and then it's so liberal that it accommodates people of all different stature, even people who have, like you're saying, some material motivation, and through the process can get purified. So how it's meant for the highest, and also it benefits even those.
Maharaj's point too, you also have to take it under proper guidance, because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says at the end of his commentary on the Bhagavatam that the Bhagavatam is like Mohini Murti, that she tricks the demons and she caters to the devotees. So the Bhagavatam also, like the Mayavadis, when Krishna meets the gopis and he tells them, oh, you know, you should meditate on me. It's about gyan, and I'm always with you within the heart. They say, see, this bhakti is not the highest. This is like they're meeting with the gopis, and now Krishna's telling them these things about, like, meditating on my impersonal form and everything like that. See, it's like that. And so Vishnu points out, see, they've been tricked. So it's there for people that there are other aspects there that, unless you're a devotee, you won't understand how they actually connect to the process of pure devotional service.
Another piece also is that, as we can see from different personalities like Prithu Maharaj and others who are perfect in devotional service, even maybe Shakti Avesh avatars, they'll still continue to perform duties within Varnashram, Prahlad Maharaj as well, as a setting an example. So then even Paramahamsas would apply this in their life, perhaps, but they wouldn't be attached to it. It would just be part of their function in society to encourage others to become uplifted until such time as they also become perfect.
Chikarshura Lokasanga. He quoted it 3 days ago in that blanket. It's a blanket.
Chikrishur Lokasangraham. Chikrishur Lokasangraham. Chikrishur Lokasangraham. Where are we? 25? 26. Me, 26?
You,
26. Wow. Uh-oh, we're at 3 minutes. So, not very his hand up. Tie goes to the runner. Infield fly rule.
In India, like Mataji said, previously there was this elaborate system of all kinds of rituals and things. People were like really in the family tradition following those things. And if we tell them that this is like empty, it's not really efficient nowadays. It's like it's normal that their life becomes some of those who follow the smartest still follow, make some show. They feel like you're taking everything from them. And also another thing is that because they are doing those things so elaborately, and because we say our Sankirtan movement, actually Sankirtan Yagi, is much more powerful. And if we do it, if we do it in the same focused and intense, elaborate way, then they can possibly take it. But if we are doing it like we do not give really good example, and just we think that we are doing some Sankirtan Yagya, it's much better than what you do, and they are like serious, really putting attention and effort in what they do, but we are like, like not very serious, then it cannot really make the proper impression.
Well, I like your point, and maybe this is similar to what you're saying, or it's definitely related. When Prabhupada opened the temple in Vrindavan in 1975, he brought in all the smartest to do the rituals. They went on for hours and hours and hours and hours. And we could see Prabhupada sitting there. You can still see in the videos, he's kind of like tolerating all these things. Meanwhile, we have the Harinam going on, and Prabhupada was, giving us the nod, like, this is good. And later he wrote about it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Also, yeah. Bhagavatam. What's Bhagavatam? We read it earlier. It's in the fifth canto, and or maybe sixth. And he said that those rituals weren't necessary. Just the Harinam was necessary. But if he hadn't have performed those yajnas according to the local, smartas, we wouldn't have had an actual real bona fide temple there. So this is another way that devotees accommodate those what the local people are thinking, so that they can go on with administering the Harinam at the same time.
And not only that, but he said that those same people, because they had so much influence and power, they could have made very difficult us doing things, getting things to do the it was also practical.
Well, that brings us to the end of the morning session. We thank everyone for joining us here for the readings, and we look forward to seeing you again here at 3:30 for the afternoon reading. Gopangande Anita Gora Haribo 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 Nita Gora Haribo Nita Gora Haribo Haribo Hari Bo Nitai Gora Hari Bo. Vanchikop Dribusha Kripasnabeva Chapatitanam Pavani Gyoho Vaishnabevyo Namo Namaha Nadagati Vaishnavi Niki Jai.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.